Music from Merritt Brown Clark. She calls that one. I hear Sound of Victory. You know how it goes. It is the Lonnie Hunter Show on Praise Your Inspiration Station. Doing it like we do. And I'm telling you, I've been promising you this all day. Today is What You Think Thursday. You get to ask questions that you want to hear answered to get you on that runway to a solution. And we do this every week. But today is kind of special because we've got one of the greatest counselors in the world. Yes, live in the studio. Yes, and he's slim and trim too, y'all. Don't play with me up in here. Bishop T.D. Jakes on the road, on the line, and in the studio. How you doing, man?
Wonderful, brother. It's great to be with you, Lonnie.
Good to see you, for real. Listen, let's start off by talking about the book. I happened to catch you on CNN. Great job, by the way.
Thank you.
And you talked about your new book, Let It Go.
Yes, sir.
Which talks about forgiveness, which is the season that we're in right now. Talk about it a little bit for us.
You know, it's very, very important that we develop the ability to forgive, not only so that we can obey what Jesus has told us to do, but also that we might be able to free ourselves from many things that make us sick and depressed and give us insomnia and have all kinds of physical maladies as well. So I wrote this book, Let It Go, to begin to help people find a way to get over the past and embrace the future.
Listen, I get a lot of calls on today's topic, What You Think Thursday, as it relates to forgiveness. And I want you to talk about how forgiveness is not something that we do for the person that we're forgiving.
Yeah. Forgiveness is something that we do for ourselves. It doesn't exonerate the perpetrator. It doesn't mean that you're not guilty. It doesn't mean that you were right or wrong. It just means that I refuse to allow what you did or what I perceive that you did to incarcerate me the rest of my life and make me bitter and full of malice when I have an opportunity to go forward.
So when you talk about forgiveness on a real deal, Bishop, yeah, a lot of times it's easier said than done to just say, I forgive you and I'm moving on. A lot of people walk away from that with a lot of residue. How do you deal with the realness of what's really still in your spirit, man?
I think a lot of times we say things with our mouths that we don't mean in our heart.
Sure.
I'm really not interested in a positive confession. I'm really trying to get this down in your heart that you have some resolution in your own mind that a lot of times we're angry at people for being weak, not being wicked. And when we find out that they have weaknesses that have an effect on us, whether they're spouses or children or friends or coworkers or what have you, it's amazing how we want so much mercy for our weaknesses and so little for anybody else's.
Yeah.
And so the whole premise of the book, what really started me on this process was the phrase in the Lord's Prayer where it said, forgive us our trespasses. As we forgive those who trespass against us. I always had trouble saying that because I'm asking God to treat me the way I treat people who got on my nerves.
Yeah.
And that made me a little uncomfortable. I said, either I'm going to have to change the way I treat them or I'm certainly not going to ask him to treat me like that, because I'm not a vicious person, but I will cut you like completely off.
Yeah, yeah. Just,
I'm through with you. Don't call me. Forget what I look like, everything. And all of a sudden, I began to challenge my own heart. And it started me on a voyage, and I began to write about it, write about raising children, moments of heartbreak in business and relationships with working with people, how you work through altercations with your spouse, and finding the grace to move forward without being incarcerated by the tragedies and maladies, and often just the simple disappointments. Sometimes it's not really that somebody did anything to you. Sometimes they just weren't there when you thought that they would be near to you, not really present in the moment. And sometimes it's not abuse, it's neglect.
Well, let's talk about this then, because as you talk about family forgiveness, Lou Banks writes to Facebook a question that he wanted to ask you about: how do you allow yourself to feel forgiven when you should have forgiven somebody that's now passed on?
You know, that is one of the things that I really address in the book, because a lot of us have issues with people who are deceased. And there's no way to really correct that other than to release them in your heart and in your spirit and to forgive them now. And I challenge people who are very stubborn right now against people that are living to take a cue from the questionnaire.
Sure.
And to overcome it while they have breath, resolve issues with people. Don't be so stubborn and so cold and callous, because one day when your mind does change or mature, you may not have the opportunity to resolve it with them physically. To the brother who asked the question, sometimes people do a lot of things. They write a letter to the person because it's cathartic. And sometimes they will go to the graveside or simply in prayer, forgive the person and release the person. Say, you know, I know I wasn't always there for you. Mm-hmm. I was angry with mm-hmm. you, and I'm sorry. See, until you can fathom forgiving a guilty person,
sure.
then you cannot enjoy being forgiven. Mm-hmm. Mercy is not something that the innocent need.
Okay.
When a person is innocent and we're going to court, we don't want mercy. We want justice.
Right, right.
It's only when you're guilty that you want mercy. And you can't give it if you don't get it.
You say something in that explanation right there that I think is very key. When you talk about one of the cathartic things to do is to write a letter. A lot of people, when they have been wronged mm-hmm. from somebody that's alive, mm-hmm. and they don't know how to put the words together to express how they feel, but they still feel it. Mm-hmm. How great is it to write a letter to that person so that they can't argue with the written word? They just have to read your heart and then come back and have a conversation about it.
It depends on the spirit of the letter.
Okay.
If you're going to write a letter that's full of visceral, angry mm-hmm. information, sometimes letters are even worse because we don't hear the spirit behind it.
Key.
But if you are really in the process of trying to bring closure, you know, I was hurt with you. I was angry with you. You didn't raise me. You weren't there for me. You didn't love me. I was confused about my identity, mm-hmm. all of that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But just to write somebody a letter saying you low down, dirty dog, you
right.
know,
that's, right.
the goal is to bring closure, yeah. not strife and confusion, and still be honest. I think you can be honest without being vicious.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me this. When you're writing and you're being honest, a lot of what you're saying gets misconstrued because the thought process or the sound behind the words are coming from the person who's reading it, not the person who wrote it.
Right.
So would you still say that a letter is a good way to make that happen? You say what?
If you don't have a good history of being a good writer, then maybe this is not a good place to start a literary career.
Okay. Okay. Okay, I hear you.
Yeah,
I hear you.
So maybe you choose another way to do it. Or maybe you bring a common friend that you both have mm-hmm. as a mediator, and you sit down and you have some coffee in a public place and you open this up. Whatever is going to be the best environment, but what you cannot do is walk around with this poison in your heart and infect your future because of the maladies of your past.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've got to go out and pick up the book. It's called Let It Go. It's wherever you buy good reading. It's every place. I promise you it is. You can go pick it up. The new book by Bishop T.D. Jakes. And one of the things that I've been getting a lot, Bishop, from a lot of leaders who listen to the show, mm-hmm. How do you still care for a family and still be successful in ministry? You say what?
That's very, very difficult. It's a balancing act. It's a juggling act. I haven't always gotten it right.
Mm-hmm.
I've had my children tell me I got it wrong.
Okay.
And I had to learn from that. And you have to hear that and not defend yourself. Because in the process of having a relationship, preachers are always used to influencing people with
yeah.
words.
Yeah.
But you got to take off that collar when you come home and be daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes being daddy means you got to take it on the chin sometime and listen and wise up, because at the end of the day, I don't want to win the world and lose my own kid.
Yeah, man, because daddy and pastor is one thing at church.
Right.
Because you're still leading.
Right.
But
right.
you come home. What do you take off? How do you shift that?
I take off a lot of that. I told my kids, if it comes down to a choice between a daddy and a pastor, I would much rather be your daddy than be your pastor.
Okay.
You can find a pastor all over the city, but you got one chance to have a daddy. With all of the millions of black kids who want a daddy, mm-hmm. I will not forfeit that role for nothing.
While we're talking about the youth, and I'm glad you brought that up, because Vanessa Thomas writes to Facebook, why are young black men in general such a threat to the society, and what can we do to change this?
I think that anytime something is perceived as a threat, it has to be rebranded. It has to be retooled.
Mm-hmm.
We have to raise our young black men and black women to fit within a society rather than to create a separate society.
Okay.
When you train somebody to create their own reality, that's fine if they stay in their community. But if you're going to infiltrate the broader world and be effective economically and mm-hmm. academically, mm-hmm. you have to some degree, at least publicly, assimilate.
Okay.
And in order to do that, you can't start that at 20 or 25. You can do it. But ideally, as we begin to integrate them into the broader society, the key word here, people, is exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Expose your kids to everything. They can go back and still be them, but if you expose them to a broader world, their whole worldview changes. And I think it's so important to do that. And the other thing is, there, yes, there's some intimidation, and people are often misunderstand you, and you might choose a particular style of dress that causes people to misunderstand you. You have one or two choices. Either try to educate the world to the fact that what they see is not what they get,
okay,
and you're going to spend the rest of your life doing that every time you encounter somebody, or you're going to have to adapt a style that's appropriate for the environment you want to work in and grow in, and then on your free time, do your thing the way you like to do it.
Let's attach that to Trayvon Martin. I mean, and he was doing what he knew to do at a 17-year-old's mindset with the whole look. And that got misconstrued. You say what?
I don't think anything was inappropriate about his look, his dress, his style. He's a 17-year-old kid. He's dressing in the fashion of his day. It wouldn't have been any different if he. There are white kids who wear hoodies. There was nothing inappropriate about anything that I've read so far about his behavior that warranted suspicion. That's what we want to know. What was he doing that was suspicious? Except being just walking.
Yeah, and not even walking in his workplace or walking in a place where that would be inappropriate. Just walking down the street, being him.
Yeah, it's different if he says, you know, there's this kid standing by the bedroom window and he looks suspicious.
Exactly.
Or there's a kid with a screwdriver in his hand prying open the door. It's something suspicious. But the kid is walking down the street dressing like any other kid in his age group, you know. I don't see anything suspicious about that. And even if it were suspicious, he didn't have the legal right and authority to respond the way that he did. They discouraged him from doing so. He did so anyway. And I think we have every right to question his behavior. And more important than his behavior is to hold our judicial systems accountable because they are paid by our dollars to protect our families.
So would you say that even as much as we have found out about this case and how many other pieces of the puzzle are so out of order and out of sync, would you say that still race is the highest issue in here? Or when we look at how the police dealt with it, the cover-ups that are allegedly being done, would you still say that race is priority one?
I don't know that it's priority one.
Good.
I think there's a lot more investigation that needs to be done. We don't know who paid off who.
Yeah.
We don't know who's in bed with what politician. I don't think it's as simple as race itself. That certainly may be a factor, but I think it's premature to jump to conclusions before you have all the evidence. What we do know is that something stinks.
Right.
We don't know where it's coming from, but we know something stinks about this story, and we have every right to challenge it.
All right, Bishop, I want to kind of shift it for you a little bit. And again, ladies and gentlemen, Let It Go is the name of the book. You need to go and pick it up right as we are speaking. You should be on your way to pick it up. This is a best-selling author that has taken out his time and talked to us one-on-one. And I think it's priceless that you are getting this opportunity to share with him. Darnell Diamond McCoy, and we're talking relationships here, he writes, Bishop Jakes, how do you stay focused as a man of God and your wife claims to be a woman of God but doesn't show it?
that's a very painful experience. I think it's something that you have to pray about. Unfortunately, marriage is a negotiation, and people use everything to barter with, from scriptures to sex.
Okay,
and it sounds like there's some bartering going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you see it very frequently in Christian marriages where people accost each other because you're not as spiritual as I am, or you're not as holy as I am, or you know, sometimes we'll do it with sex, or we'll do it with money. I think we need to stop using scriptures to attack people we're married to, stop using sex, stop using money, and bring it back down to an equilibrium, as I have certain needs for you as a wife and as a husband.
Naturally. Yeah, yeah.
And how can we work out our lives together? Let God convict of sin,
because
he does that better than us.
And is the only one that should do it.
He's the only one that should do it.
Yeah.
So let's not pastor our spouses.
Okay.
Let's be husbands to them. Advise when appropriate, because if you're not careful in the process of being a pastor to your spouse, you'll start using your scriptures to manipulate power over the person, and you'll make them resent your faith rather than come to your faith.
Let me tell you what's key about what you just said, because our other question talks about females who are pastors and they go home and they are the helpmeet,
right?
You know, the wife,
right?
And what you just said is key as it relates to don't pastor your spouse, which means you can be a female pastor and go home and still be wife. Right?
Nobody walked down the aisle with a man or a woman, put a ring on their finger, and spent a honeymoon night to get a preacher. Come on. Come on,
okay,
let's be real.
We ain't praying right in through
marriage
here.
Is for earth. We are not taking it to heaven.
Okay.
Jesus clearly defines what marriage is all about.
Right.
It is not church. And when you try to make the house be the church, mm-hmm. then the people have no home.
Excellent.
You do not marry a woman because she can play for the choir.
Or sing.
Yeah. And if you do, you're going to regret it.
Yeah.
Trying to use your kids as props in your ministry when they're not there yet is detrimental to them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's understand the difference between home and church. Jesus did not say, I come that you might have church. He said, I come that you might have life
yeah.
and that you might have it more abundantly. And I think it's what we do to our families is terrible. Our kids need a daddy. They need to be able to say anything to you as a daddy without you banging on a pulpit or telling their business or damaging them.
Absolutely.
And the same thing is true about a spouse. If you give your wife a husband and give your husband a wife, then it heals an itch in their lives. But if you go home and give them a pastor,
excellent.
They still have not been married to anybody. And anything can happen when you don't recognize the fact that that void is being filled.
Listen, we're going to talk a little bit further. I want to make sure that our other markets know that we got to sign off. You know, Philadelphia, you stay close, but everybody else that's listening to us, I'll be back tomorrow for more of the same. D.C., Maryland, Virginia, I want you to stand by. We're going to hang out for another hour. You know how we do it, right? It is the Lonnie Hunter Show on Praise, your inspiration station. Bishop, unequally yoked, both saved. Is that possible?
Can you both be saved and be unequally yoked?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It may not be in the biblical connotation of being unequally yoked. You can be unequally yoked intellectually.
Mm-hmm.
You can be unequally yoked sexually.
Mm-hmm.
You can be unequally yoked emotionally. Because we don't all have the same capacity to love, to think, to learn. And that's why it's very, very important that you go through premarital counseling from somebody good.
Yeah.
And that you talk about everything other than the choir song and praise the Lord and glory to God or anything else. To become intoxicated, either by spirituality or sexuality,
mm-hmm.
to the degree that you don't ask the tough questions
yeah.
and get to know each other really is a chemistry for misery. I wrote a book called Before You Do.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing else that you would get into a long-term commitment, buying a house, a career move, a college degree, that you would not thoroughly investigate from a sober perspective. But we go into marriage for the dumbest reasons in the world. And then we're shocked when it doesn't work.
Because she's cute.
Yeah. He's got a car.
Right.
He got a good job. He got hazel eyes. I want my baby to have hazel eyes. I mean, something about ignorant stuff. He can sing.
Yeah, the devil can sing.
You need to understand. And the other thing you need to understand, if there are any young people, please hear me. When you pick somebody, you're not just picking somebody for this season in your life.
Mm-hmm.
This season will pass and you will still be stuck.
Absolutely.
You want to pick somebody for the long haul, because what you picked her for or him for when they're a teen, they may lose that figure.
They're going to lose it.
Amen.
And
if you don't like the contents, don't marry for the box.
Yeah. Okay.
Because the box is going to change shapes, fade, fall out. Maybe I should have used another term. I thought a brother was. But you feel me. Can I be real? I'm not a very religious person. I'm a keep it real sort of guy. And on Sunday morning, I keep it real.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is you marry for reasons that will not last a year.
Yeah.
And you look around and you're with somebody that you have not examined intrinsically. And here's the other problem. Eventually, all of us resent people who do not love us for who we are and not what we have.
Absolutely.
Intimacy is into me see.
Mm-hmm. Into me see.
Absolutely.
Bishop T.D. Jakes live on the Lonnie Hunter Show right now. Bishop, tell them, how do they get to you for more questions to be answered like this? Twitter, Facebook, how do you?
They can follow me. I got my Twitter out right now. I'm at Bishop Jakeson. I don't get to answer every one of them, but I answer far more frequently than most people do. So they can go on Twitter and follow me at Bishop Jakeson. I have a Facebook site, T.D. Jakeson Potter's House. You can go to Facebook and inquire and put comments in.
Sure.
Or they could come to church tonight at Deliverance and hear me think out loud. Because to me, what we're doing today is more than preaching. It's thinking out loud. And I think that's very, very important to combine the practicality of getting through life with the eventuality of going to heaven. I want to go to heaven, but while I'm waiting, I got to figure out how to survive.
You slipped that plug in there real clean.
I'm good.
Be there tonight. That was clean, bro. I'm going to tell you for real. He yes, is at sir. Deliverance tonight on Lehigh. You can go by there and experience him live as he is one-on-one, up close and personal with the new book, Let It Go.
Amen. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be sharing and ministering tonight. I look forward. I don't get to Philly often. I hope your schedule allows you to come out and be a part of this event. You don't have to be real churchy to come. You don't. It's not about denominations. It's about way of life. I don't care what you got on.
Yeah.
I don't care what you look like. But if you're sincerely interested in truth and help and love, come on out. I'd love to meet you.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully you have enjoyed our time together with Bishop T.D. Jakes. I want to thank you, my brother, for stopping by and
thank
seeing the little
for
brother.
Having me. You're cool, man. Thank
you. I'm cool. It's over now. Y'all ain't going to be able to tell me nothing. It's the Lonnie Hunter Show right here on Praise.